I am just dancing a little bit till Mark gets his cup of coffee and I get Adobe started up. So I'm just going to be talking for a few seconds till we can tell Mark to get his things. And I'm currently trying to get Adobe so I can get this audio saved. And so it's looks like it's a cool day outside, but it's warm in here, and but it's not raining.
At least not in here. Shabbat shalom, y'all.
Oh, wait. I didn't hit start yet.
Oh, you okay. Didn't hit start yet. You ready?
No. Did
you hit start now?
No, I hit start.
You've started now.
I'm sort of started.
Are you sure we started?
Yes, I'm positive.
Okay, you see the little line going
up? I see little green lines
going
up and down.
Okay, Shabbat shalom, y'all. This is Mark. It's time for the Beit Yaakov Hebraic Heritage Ministries Midrash for this Shabbat. It is, let's see, the scripture readings are from Leviticus chapter 9 through 11, all three chapters complete. Then 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 1. Is that correct? That's not correct. Oh, 1 through 7. And 1 Kings 8, 5 and 56 through 61. It's actually in the opposite order, but like that. Then Psalm 76, 1 through the end of the chapter. I think it's 12 verses. And then the Brit Hadashah portion is going to be from Mark chapter 7, verses 1 through 23. And we'll begin with Leviticus chapter 9 and verse 1. And I'm just going to go ahead and read the whole thing, and then we'll start what running commentary we can do, and open it up for comment. Okay, chapter 9. And it came to pass on the eighth day that Moshe called Aharon and his sons and the elders of Israel, and he said unto Aharon, take thee a young calf for a sin offering, and a ram for a burnt offering without blemish, and offer them before Yahweh. And unto the children of Israel thou shalt speak, saying, take ye a kid of the goats for a sin offering, and a goat, and a calf, and a lamb, both of the first year, and without blemish, for a burnt offering, also a bullock and a ram for a peace offerings, and a sacrifice before Yahweh, and a meat offering mingled with oil, a flour offering, or grain offering, mingled with oil, for today Yahweh will appear before you. And they brought that which Moshe commanded before the tabernacle of the congregation, and all the congregation drew near and stood before Yahweh. And Moshe said, this is the thing which Yahweh commanded that we should do, and the glory of Yahweh shall appear unto you. And Moshe said unto Aharon, go unto the altar and offer thy sin offering and thy burnt offering, and make an atonement for thyself and for the people, and offer the offering for the people, and make an atonement for them as Yahweh commanded. Aharon therefore went unto the altar and slew the calf of the sin offering which was for himself. And the sons of Aharon brought the blood unto him, and he dipped his finger in the blood and put it upon the horns of the altar and poured out the blood at the bottom of the altar. But the fat and the kidneys and the caul above the liver and the sin offering he burnt upon the altar as Yahweh commanded Moshe. And the flesh and the hide he burnt with fire without the camp. And he slew the burnt offering, and Aharon's sons presented unto him the blood, which he sprinkled round about upon the altar. And they presented the burnt offering unto him, with the pieces thereof and the head, and he burnt them upon the altar. And he did wash the innards and the legs, and burnt them upon the burnt offering on the altar. And he brought the people's offering, and took the goat, which was the sin offering for the people, and slew it, and offered it for sin as the first. And he brought the burnt offering and offered it according to the manner. And he brought the meat offering and took an handful thereof and burnt it upon the altar beside the burnt sacrifice of the morning. He slew also the bullock and the ram for a sacrifice of peace offerings, which was for the people. And Aharon's sons presented unto him the blood, which he sprinkled about upon the altar round about. and the fat of the bullock and of the ram, the rump and that which covereth the inwards, and the kidneys and the caul above the liver, and they put the fat upon the breasts, and he burnt the fat upon the altar. And the breasts and the right shoulder Aharon waved for a wave offering before Yahweh, as Moshe commanded. And Aharon lifted up his hand toward the people, and blessed them, and came down from offering of the sin offering, and the burnt offering, and peace offerings. And Moshe and Aharon went into the tabernacle of the congregation, and came out, and blessed the people. And the glory of Yahweh appeared unto all the people. And there came a fire out from before Yahweh, and consumed upon the altar the burnt offering and the fat, which when the people saw, they shouted and fell on their faces. Okay. I'm just going to say for chapter 9 and verse 1, and it came to pass on the eighth day that Moshe called Aharon and his sons and the elders of Israel. And the eighth day speaks of the new beginning. And I'm going to leave it open to questions and comments to anybody else that's got one, because I've been spouting off all day.
Well, I think it's important when it mentions the eighth day here, because if you look at the tabernacles, the consecration that took place is basically in type what's going to happen in that tabernacle period of time in the end time. And we are going to be able to see that. And even it's dealing with some of the sacrifices that of the priests, the priestly service, the duties of what they're supposed to do. And when it says here, and Yahweh will appear unto you, I think what it's talking about here is he'll manifest himself in a special way to the people. He actually did not appear to them, but he said he would. If he is in the room or his Holy Spirit is here, then he has appeared to us in a special way, in a special manner. I see that there too. And it says that...
Well, it says in the last couple of verses that they saw his glory, and then the fire came out and devoured the stuff on the thing. They definitely saw the manifestation of Yahweh, whether or not it was actually Yahweh.
Yeah, because it says that he is a consuming fire. And out of the throne, out of the throne room comes rivers of fire. So we know that the fire that he puts forth in this manner is one that will purge. It'll purge you and make you righteous, and so forth. And it says all the congregation stood before the Lord, before Yahweh. So in other words, they were, whether it meant all the 6 million or whatever, how many people they had there, whether it was them or it was the elders, I don't know if they represented them, but I'll tell you what, there must have been a partial lot of people there to see this manifestation of what took place on tabernacles. Everybody was supposed to gather on tabernacles. You know, so we have this, and I think what Moses said in verse 7 here, he says, go into the altar and offer thy sin sacrifice and thy burnt offering. Make an atonement for yourself first. You see? So right away we know that this priestly gathering and allowing them to have a priest is not a perfect priesthood. It's not a perfect priesthood, because he had to make a sacrifice, offer it for himself first. And it says, because it says, which was for himself. So before, he had to make sure that he was purged clean before he could go and make that offering unto the people. And I was reading about in verse 10, it talked about the fat and the kidneys, and the caul and above the liver and so forth. It sort of brought to mind that the best part, the inner parts, is what they offered. Now, I would submit to you, and my thinking is that what does Yahweh want offered of us first? He wants us our minds, and he wants our hearts. He wants the inner parts, because he says down here, they took the flesh of the hides and burned it without the camp. See, the outward appearance, our bodies, are nothing.
Right.
It's a contention over the inward parts, our minds and our souls, that that he is concerned about, because he says that it's the flesh is filthy. Filth flesh. It's not worth anything. And the question I would submit to people out there is your all on the altar as a sacrifice given? That's for all of us, not just you. That's for me too. Do we this?
Especially for you.
Well, I know, especially for me. I understand that. Also, I'd like to bring out when it says, and Aaron lifted up his hand towards the people, and what did he give him? Probably the Shema, and he gave him the blessing that was recorded in number 6, 24 through 26. I believe that was the Aaronic blessing that he gave here. It says, when he did this and the people were blessed, he says, and the glory of Yahweh appeared unto all the people. Now that would be something to see. They had the privilege of that, and yet they did not heed.
That's the Shekinah. That's the same thing that's going to be sitting over all of our tabernacles, like we saw in the 5-minute update this morning. That's the same Shekinah. It's going to be the one that not only sets us apart, but also protects us and protects our stuff while we're visiting with him. That's cool, Bill. Real good. Are there any other questions or comments here? Got a little more on that, Bill?
Well, the only thing I'm looking over here, what the rabbis wrote, it talked about the on Aaron's offering was an atonement for sin for the golden calf. It says here that the people's atonement was for the sale of Joseph, which I don't totally understand. Uh-huh. But I understand the first part. It could have been that the same thing should have been for the people too, as far as the golden calf. Yeah. So this, I have this underlined, the fact that I question that,
yeah.
You know, that part of it. That it was totally for, I think, for the atonement for...
A question. Well, what time of the year was this taking place as far as in what month? Was this the Day of Atonement?
No. The rabbis are telling us in the Chumash that this happened the first day of the 8 was the 23rd day of the month of Adar. And then what we're seeing right here is the 8th day, which would be the first day of the month of Aviv, of the year following them coming out.
So it would have been at close to Passover in the month of Aviv, as we're talking about,
right.
This is taking place.
Right.
Unleavened bread. Talk about unleavened bread last week.
Yeah.
Because it sounds very much, the things that were taking place, very similar to what would have taken place on Day of Atonement.
Yes,
because,
I agree.
Because of sins, it talks about a sin offering, a burnt offering, a guilt offering, peace offering. So all these things are covered in this particular event. So there's an entire cleansing, sanctification, setting apart. It is the inauguration of the Levitical priesthood. After all the things that Moses has been setting down and setting forth. And it's interesting how supervisorily, Moses is taking charge, and it's as though Aaron is almost like he's holding Aaron's hand and moving his hand to the different locations for the different things that are being done. It's almost as though Moses has all of it down pat. I mean, he's got it down. He knows exactly what everything's supposed to be done. He understands it, whereas Aaron's kind of, well, okay, now I'm doing this now. I'm following this and trying to follow through the order. So it's interesting to see it finally in action, taking place, and the Aaronic priesthood learning the skills necessary for what they're going to be called upon to do for the next so many generations that would follow.
That's exactly right. The fact is that I think they went through every different kind of offering that the Kohanim would have to do ever. The first thing they had to do was make an atonement for themselves and for the people before they could come before Yahweh. Look at how many different kinds of offerings there are here. It says the first they had the sin offering to cover their sins and to reconcile with Yahweh. Then in verse 3, they had the burnt offering. A burnt offering was a sweet fragrance to Yahweh, which symbolizes the prayers of the person who's doing the offering. Next comes a peace offering to show our submission to Yahweh's government. Then there's a grain offering mixed with oil to symbolize our personal set apartness to the Spirit. And our submitted spirit-filled attitude to Yahweh, all to prepare to meet our Elohim. They were told, you are going to meet your Elohim. You've got to do all these things, and you've got to set yourselves apart, is what the idea is. And so we're talking about every offering that there could possibly be made, including the atonement. They had a goat here for the atonement. Okay, so, yeah, I think that we saw all of that. And it had to be done to, first of all, to set apart the Kohanim. They had to set themselves apart before they could represent the people to Yahweh. Anything else?
As I was reading this portion, I couldn't help but think about the 40 years that Moses had being trained in all the knowledge and wisdom of Egypt. And then, of course, he was 40 years where he was just a shepherd. So we see a culmination of these two different lifestyles coming together to become someone who is a prophet, more than a prophet, who is acting as a priest, but more than a priest. It's just amazing what Yahweh has done to this man to bring him to this place, to be able to make him so humble and yet so very much in charge, to be able to, not that they should be contradictory at all, but that he would be able to handle it in such a way that he's doing all these delicate things that are so important to the heart of Yahweh in regards to bringing about sanctification and purification of sins in the practical sense of it. I mean, since that these animal sacrifices are to be types, not, they're only types and shadows of the truth, what is going to be taking place through the Messiah, but still, that he should function in such a way that it would be done very carefully and with such wisdom.
One other thing here, it says that Moses and Aaron went to the tabernacle and came out, and they blessed the people, like I had said. And it says, and the glory of Yahweh appeared to the people. And down here, and the last thing it says in this verse, it says, and they shouted and fell on their faces. Now, if you want to be slain in the spirit, properly, you're going to fall on your face. Guaranteed, not on your back. That is fictitious. I'm sorry. It's not true. It's not the way it is.
I think we kind of mentioned that in the five-minute update.
I think you sort of mentioned that there. But I can just imagine when this fire came down and they consumed that and they shouted, whatever they shouted.
Oy vey.
It could be oy vey. And they just fell forward. They fell flat on the ground. And that also is a form of worship, you know. They felt there was what we see sometimes, the bowing your head in prayer and so forth, is not really very Hebraic, my understanding. My understanding is that they would prostrate themselves on the ground, or that they would, with eyes open, lift their head towards heaven and their arms stretched out, and they would pray in that manner. I heard a lesson on that or something like that. That it's not. I'm not saying it's wrong to bow your head and pray, but I'm just saying it's not in constant fact of what they did there.
It doesn't need to be a convention that you do. In fact, many times they just raised their hands and looked up to pray, and that's it's not necessary to. Okay, everybody, you had every head bowed, every eye closed. You know. I see that hand. Okay. Are there any other questions or comments here? On chapter 9, we're on verse 23. And Moshe and Aharon went into the tabernacle of the congregation and came out and blessed the people. We've already talked about the blessing, and Bill thought that he thinks that it's the Aaronic blessing, and I happen to agree with him. We're not told what that is until Numbers chapter 6, but you know I think that's exactly what it was. But verse 23 looks to me like Moshe leading his brother into the presence of Yahweh and introducing his successor. That's what it looks like to me. I'm sorry, what?
Another
You have another controversy.
Well, not really, but it says, and they blessed them and came down from the offering. Now, can I... In Exodus, I think in Exodus 20, verse 26, it was forbidden for him to have steps.
He didn't have steps.
He didn't have steps.
He had a ramp.
So it says that he came down.
Yes, he had a ramp to go up to the...
So they couldn't step up to it. I'm just saying, some of the altars, some of the pictures I've seen of the altars have steps. And I don't know that in any of those that I've seen that I ever saw a ramp. But the ramp would make more sense to me.
Yeah.
To come up, to come up and down.
Up the ramp. It was the idea of lifting, lifting that leg and up onto the thing. That was
so. Most of the pictures you see of the altar with steps is certainly not right.
Correct.
According to Exodus 20.
Correct.
You know.
Correct.
So
I
you just don't step on it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Don't step in it either. Well, yeah, in.
No, but people surmise that they walk and don't step.
Okay. Other questions or comments here? Aaron, let's see. Looks like Aaron Moses took Aaron to present his successor before Yah, an introduction, as it were, of the resurrected high priest. Aaron, who had allowed Israel to sin, was figuratively resurrected from the dead in the, in his consecration and service. So a picture, a metaphorical picture of the resurrection is happening right here too. So what had what happened? Yahweh answered by fire. And Yahweh accepted the offering. I mean, if you think about Elijah and the 450 prophets of Baal up on Mount Carmel, and he said the God who answers by fire, that one will be God, and everyone agreed. And Eliyahu made it as hard as he possibly could for Yahweh to devour that sacrifice. You know, poured all that water on it when they hadn't had rain in all those years, and Yahweh answers by fire and licked it all up like every last molecule of water came off of there too. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mark, I was thinking about that same occurrence as well when I read this portion, and I was thinking about it in that the people were amazed. There was an amazement that came upon them when this particular exposition of the power of Yahweh to consume the sacrifice in his fire. It was something that. So unnatural in the sense that they hadn't seen it for a while, or at least they have the Shekinah glory, the glory cloud, the fire by night, but still this must have been something even more amazing to see it happen right before their very eyes, to come and consume it, that they just fell down. I mean, they were definitely going to give glory to Yahweh at this point in time. Emotionally, they were probably overwhelmed with what was going on. The same way as what happened with the consuming of the sacrifice there on Mount Carmel with Elijah or Eliyahu.
Very good. Any other questions or comments? We got anything on Pal Talk, Phil? Anybody there have anything salient to lay on us? That means important, you know. Salient. It means it has to, that deals with the subject. We'd love to hear from you guys.
Take the if you want to say anything, raise your hand. I'll get to you eventually. Not much right now.
Okay. In that case, we'll move on to chapter 10. And
Water Garden's right. She says you guys get cracking and commenting.
All right. Chapter 10. Ronald, would you read chapter 10 for me, please? I've been spouting off enough today.
Okay. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took their respective fire pans, and after putting fire in them, placed incense on it and offered strange fire before Yahweh, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out from the presence of Yah and consumed them, and they died before Yahweh. Then Moses said to Aaron, "It is what Yahweh spoke, saying, 'By those who come near me, I will be treated as holy or set apart, and before all the people, I will be honored.' So Aaron therefore kept silent. Moses called also to Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Aaron's uncle, Uzziel, and said to them, 'Come forward, carry your relatives away from the front of the sanctuary to the outside of the camp.' So they came forward and carried them, still in their tunics, to the outside of the camp, as Moses had said. Then Moses and Aaron, and to his sons Eleazar and Ithamar, he said, 'Do not uncover your heads, nor tear your clothes, so that you may not die, and that he may not become wrathful against all the congregation. But your kinsmen, the whole house of Israel, shall bewail the burning which Yahweh has brought about. You shall not even go out of the doorway of the tent of meeting, lest you die. For Yahweh's anointing oil is upon you.' So they did according to the word of Moses. And Yahweh spoke to Aaron, saying, 'Do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you, when you come into the tent of meeting, so that you may not die. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations, so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, and between the unclean and the clean, and so as to teach the sons of Israel all the statutes which Yahweh has spoken to them through Moses.' Then Moses spoke to Aaron and to his surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, 'Take the grain offering that is left over from Yahweh's offering by fire and eat it unleavened beside the altar, for it is most holy. You shall eat it, moreover, in a set-apart place, because it is your due and your son's due out of Yahweh's offering by fire, for thus I have been commanded. The breast of wave offering, however, and the thigh of the offering, you may eat it in a clean place, you and your sons and your daughters with you, for they have been given as your due and your son's due out of the sacrifices of the peace offerings of the sons of Israel. The thigh offered by lifting up, and the breast offered by waving, they shall bring along with the offering by fire of the portions of fat, to present as a wave offering before Yahweh. So it shall be a thing perpetually due to you and your sons with you, just as Yahweh has commanded.' But Moses searched carefully for the goat of the sin offering, and behold, it had been burned up. So he was angry with Aaron's surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, saying, 'Why did you not eat the sin offering at the holy place? For it is most holy, and he gave it to you to bear away the sin or the guilt of the congregation, to make atonement for them before Yahweh. Behold, since its blood had not been brought inside into the sanctuary, you should certainly have eaten it in the sanctuary, just as I commanded.' But Aaron spoke to Moses, 'Behold, this very day they presented their sin offering and their burnt offering before the Lord. When things like these happened to me, if I had eaten a sin offering today, would it have been good in the sight of Yahweh?' Then Moses heard it, and it seemed good in his sight."
Anybody have a question or comment about the verse chapter 10? Go ahead, Susie.
About what is said regarding the brothers bewailing the burning which Yahweh has kindled, and to Aaron, "Do not unbind your head nor tear your garments, lest you die," as if the brothers were to share his mourning, but he still had to, well, he really couldn't partake so much in what they were doing for him. I guess he had to be an example of, I don't know, a little more stoic-like. I just thought it was interesting that they could carry his burden, whereas he didn't seem to be able to do that, as according to what Yahweh was saying or what Moses instructed. but it became the whole house's burden, the losing of his sons, and you know, their sin.
Okay, the way I see that is that the priests are supposed to be the representatives of Yahweh to the people, as well as of the people to Yahweh. And so they had to represent both ways there. Yahweh was righteous in his action against Aaron's sons, because so they could not weep. Okay? Nadav and Abihu had done wrong, had done wickedly, actually. They went ahead and they did something that, first of all, it wasn't commanded to them to do. And maybe they carried in fire that came from some other place than the altar. Maybe it actually came from the altar, but because it was not commanded for them to do that, it became strange fire. There are a lot of different ways to look at how this whole thing happened, but they did what was not commanded. And I mean, and they didn't ask. Yeah, they didn't ask Moshe, should we do this? It was a sin of presumption and now the high priest has to represent Yahweh to the people, and so he can't outwardly mourn. Meanwhile, can you imagine the conflict that's going on in Aaron and in his sons? You know, that explains why they didn't eat the sin offering at the end there, because they were just beside themselves.
Have a comment from Water Garden. We don't want her hand to get tired. So, Water Garden, you have the mic now.
Okay. I always look for patterns, and the pattern that I found in this portion, if you notice their names, probably you guys know this, but maybe somebody doesn't, but that Nadab and Abihu, then think over, that's in Leviticus 9, but if you look over in 1 Chronicles 13, you have the exact same thing happening again, and look at the name of the man whose two sons, this is the story where the ark, instead of being carried on the priest's shoulders, they put it on a cart. And what's the guy's name? His name is Abinadab. So there you have the combination of Nadab and Abihu put together into one name. And once again, his son is Uzzah and Ahio. And remember, Uzzah is the guy who touches the ark, and then God's anger is kindled, and it's just the same story being repeated once again. So I thought it was interesting that even the actual name of the father of these two boys is a combination of the two priests. So I always look for patterns, and it's like the people were rejoicing during this celebration here in Leviticus 9, and yet when things are not done according to the pattern, so I think from 1 Chronicles 13, we can infer that these two boys, Nadab and Abihu, did something outside of what Moses commanded them to do or how they were to do it. It doesn't actually spell out what they did wrong in Leviticus 9, but if you look over in 1 Chronicles 13, which is exactly a repeat of this story, you can see that by this time they certainly should have known that they were to carry that ark on the shoulders of the priests. And because of the name play here, I think it's inferring back and telling us something about what they did wrong in Leviticus 9. And that's all I have to share.
Very good. We have exactly the same thing in our 1 Kings passage today. 2 Samuel, I'm sorry, 2 Samuel passage in the Haftarah today. And you are absolutely correct. Abinadab, and I mean, that's a really good correlation there. I knew that the that the response from Yahweh was the same, but I didn't understand about the names. Thank you very much for sharing that. Susie, you got something?
Just thinking a little bit more about Moshe and Aaron, excuse me, really, standing before the people and him really being torn, as Mark really commented about, really wanting to break down, I imagine, considering what happened to his sons, and really being compelled through Moshe from Yahweh to just stand strong and be Yahweh's representative, whereas before with the making of the golden calf, he was really swayed by the people and his own feelings. And this time, he had to put them aside and just represent Yahweh and not succumb to his feelings.
I think it's interesting that in these chapters we have, there's three fires that's mentioned. The first one was the fire of true worship in 924. Then the strange fire of false worship in 10:1, and then in 8 it says the devouring fire of judgment of Yahweh in 10:2. So we have, not only is he a purging fire, but he's also a fire of judgment. He's a fire of judgment, and I think that we need to take note of that. And another note is the fact that Aaron, and probably Moses too, were stunned to the fact that these young men had just been consecrated over an 8-day period, and they get zapped right now, right on the spot. Where was it done? Probably right there at the altar. They probably died right there. If he's going to be innocent like he was in the sanctuary. So the sin was committed there, the death was brought forth there. And he didn't waste any time. So I can tell you that, I don't know how some of you feel, but sometimes some of the things that over the years that I've done, everything like that, I probably deserve to be zapped right on the spot. You know what I'm saying?
And I know exactly what you're saying.
And I don't mean
you
from Zeus.
You deserve to get zapped right on the spot lots of times.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that that's true.
Not me.
But when he says, when he talks about the drinking of, I think that in correlation with what the two young priests did, and it says, do not drink wine. So, and my thinking is the fact that they may have been drunk or drinking a lot of wine at the time that they did this, and their minds were not clear. I could be wrong on that, but otherwise, it doesn't make sense. He just come out, don't take strong drink. But I'll say this, that on the one Sukkot that we had, somebody did bring wine into the sanctuary when we're having the services, which was totally, totally against biblical principles to do such. And whether they were ignorant of the fact, I don't know. But of course, he's no longer with us, so. That was basically one of the reasons he shouldn't have been with us. And it talks about that they may do that we may put differences between the holy and the unholy, between unclean and clean. I think that'll take you back to Exodus. Take you back to Exodus 3:5 in dealing with that. And it says that you may teach the children of Israel. I think this here about the statutes and so forth, I think this is dealing with Deuteronomy 33:10 and the special duties that were to be done. But all this, basically, even for us today, is a teaching process. Mm-hmm. And it was a teaching process for these people back here at that time, for all of them. And some part they were supposed to eat, and some of it they were not allowed to eat, their portion of it. And of course, we have that confrontation down here with Moses and Aaron over the eating and the not eating. But I think that they didn't have everything down pat, or else they just weren't listening to Yahweh, or they weren't listening to Moses. You know, sometimes it goes in one ear and out the other, on out the other ear. And I think that this was a, should have been, hopefully, a lesson well learned to those people that are in charge spiritually. Mm-hmm. Of all the people, they need to discern what is right and what is proper to do in a service and so forth. And is there a need for order? Yes. Do we have to have pomp and circumstance? No, not necessarily. But he wants order. And the order that he wants is what's written in the Tanakh.
Okay, a couple of things about the incense. I don't think it was either the incense or the fire that was the problem. Yahweh had given no instruction. Okay, that's the first thing. If it had to do with the fire being from someplace else, that's also, it was not commanded. Nadab and Abihu were slain because they added to what the Father had commanded. When we add to that which Abba commands, we are as guilty and as liable for judgment as Nadab and Abihu. It is only the once-for-all offering of Yeshua that keeps us from their fate. Do not do what you think Yahweh would like, as if to do it to him. If it isn't commanded by Abba, it ain't good. It's presumptuous. That's the basic thing here that we need to take away from it.
Is it kind of along the lines of obedience is better than sacrifice?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, told to David about the issue of the ark and the cart.
I think it's important here to show the difference between the men and the women. The men could eat the sin offering, women could eat the meal offering. There was a difference in what they could do. Why exactly that is? Well, somebody smarter than me have to figure that out. The only thing I know, that's what the word says to do. So I don't question it. To that extent that he says that's what they were supposed to do. And he does make a distinction.
Okay. Doing what Yahweh says is what sanctifies him in our lives. If we add what we please or do what he commands in a way that he did not prescribe, okay, we're making his words common. We're making his words common like any other words. We despise his words by adding to them or by doing them in a way that he didn't prescribe. Okay. Other questions or comments?
I was thinking, too, about what happened with Moses when he was so close to entering into the promised land, and the people were wanting water once again. And this was much later on in the wilderness journey. So close to going into the land that he was called upon by Yahweh to, of course, bring forth water from the rock. And this time he was supposed to speak to it. And again, there was a violation of the instruction of Elohim in regards to procedure. And I think all of us are familiar with the story that Moses, because of his anger and being provoked by the people, struck the rock again. Now, his life wasn't taken, but as far as being able to go into the promised land, that was withheld from him. So I would agree with what's being presented here in regards to the procedure or following the word of Yahweh as it's presented, as it's given. And I think of us as believers, there's so much more that we have for the calling upon our lives and to carrying out the Great Commission and actually fulfilling the words that he spoke to us. And that he said that for those that believe, there would be the signs, the attesting miracles that we would see people healed. We would see people delivered from demonic presence. We would see people even raised from the dead. And that we would be able to, not in testing, but if the circumstance arose where there was a deadly thing, it would not harm us. Not that we would take it in a way that we would intentionally mean it to happen. These signs are to follow all believers, whether you're in the Western Church or whether you're in any particular group, if you're truly following in the teachings of Yahweh, in the teachings of Yeshua, should we not see these attesting miracles following our lives as well? I wonder about my own life in regards to seeing these things take place. Why am I not? Am I not pursuing it with enough vigor? Is there things in my own life that I need to confess and turn from? These are questions that I have to ask, because I believe that these are providential, that this is what will take place if I am actually walking in His ways. Not only will I will have the comfort and the assurance of the Spirit, saying that this is the way, walk ye in it, but also have the evidential proof that, yes, His hand is upon my life. Just as when Yeshua was being tempted and spoken to by the Pharisees and scribes of His day, and the Sadducees as well, and saying, well, then what sign will you show us that what you say is true, that you are who you claim to be? And He said that my testimony is that the very works that I do testify that I am who I am.
Okay. It says in verse, where is it? Verse 5. Well, verse 4 and 5. Moshe called Mishael and Elzathan, the sons of Uziel, the uncle of Aaron, and said unto them, come near, carry your brethren from before the sanctuary out of the camp. So they went near and carried them in their coats out of the camp, as Moses had said. In their coats. Now, did they carry them in Nadav and Abihu's coats, or was it in the uncle's coats? I think that the consuming fire of Yahweh is very selective, and that they carried the remains of the two boys out in their own coats. Okay? Now, we move down to verse 9. Verse 8, and Yahweh spake unto Aharon, saying, do not drink wine nor strong drink, thou nor thy sons with thee, when ye go into the tabernacle of the congregation, lest ye die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. Priests were not to have wine or any other drink while they were in service to Yahweh. Is it possible that Nadav and Abihu were drunk, and that's what caused them to go do this? I mean, there's nothing here that says that, but it's an impression that I get, that the reason that Yahweh gave this command at this time was for that reason. Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say that in Proverbs you find wine is a mocker and beer is a brawler. Was it that they had been drinking of, say, wine or strong drink, strong enough to where what they were doing was not in their best condition, of course, that they had been affected to almost bring up mocking to the very commands and ordinances of Yahweh. Yes, they definitely lowered their inhibitions. They lowered themselves to a state where they were not able to resist a physical compulsion, maybe even the adversary, even you know the compulsion to act in that way. I'm sure that even in a place where this is going on and it's so set apart, you think, could the presence of evil be there? Would the devil be acting upon one of them there to try to throw a problem, you know, to cause a mishap? Well, maybe this is the case. I believe that it could very well be that the adversary worked in this situation. He set it up in some respects and brought about a fall. But even in this, we know that Yahweh knows about even these things before they happen. He doesn't have to warn afterwards. He didn't have to say, you can't drink any wine or any strong drink in the sanctuary from now on, because this is what happened. He knew about it. He could have warned them ahead of time, but He causes all things to work together for good to them that love Him, are called according to His purpose. And so there was going to be good that was going to be worked through in the situation. even though it was grievous. We realize it was a grievous thing for the prophet Ezekiel to give up his wife. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. He was walking very carefully in the instruction of the Spirit of Yahweh upon him. And yet, Yahweh told him, I'm going to ask a very difficult thing for you. I'm going to ask you to give up the love of your life. I'm going to ask you to give up your wife. And I'm going to ask you not to grieve, not to cut your beard or to do any of the signs of outward lamentation. But Yahweh caused that even to work together for good.
We have a question, just a clarification in Leviticus 10:1. Someone wanted to know the meaning of strange fire in verse 1. And my translation says unauthorized fire. It says unauthorized fire.
Yeah, it's there was supposed to be always a fire on the altar. The fire was never supposed to go out on the altar of burnt offering. And when they moved the altar, they took fire from it and relit the fire when they came to a camp with the fire that they had taken off the camp. They kept the same fire going all the time. And therefore, it's that particular fire that they're supposed to be burning. They're supposed to take coals off the altar to put in the censer and then put the incense on top. These guys offered strange fire, which tells me that they offered fire that was not from the altar. Okay, yeah, well, Yahweh had a bonfire right there afterward, didn't he? Wrong type of fire to have, I'll tell you what. Burning bones. Okay, I'm sorry, but I think that's an adequate answer. It may not be the exact right one, but I think it's pretty good. Other questions or comments? Okay. I've got one more thing here in verse 19. And Aaron said unto Moshe, behold, this day have they offered their sin offering and their burnt offering. I think, again, we're talking about Nadav and Abihu, even though this is having to do with Eleazar and Ithamar, okay? And I think that it could be both. You know, all of the sons gave their burnt offerings that day in the offerings of Nadav and Abihu, okay? That's the way I'm looking at it anyway. Reference was to Nadav and Abihu. Let's see. I can't read this now. Oh, the conventional wisdom is in the church is that Nadav and Abihu are lost. Is that true? Was the manner of their death their offering for atonement? They had been in full fellowship before their sin. There was only that one sin for them to atone for. So, even if we assume that because you, for every sin, you a death is deserved, and we get that from Romans chapter 6:23. For the wages of sin is death. Could it be that Nadav and Abihu were able to pay their own debt because this was the only sin that they committed, and they died the death because of it? I don't know. It's just a thought that came to mind while I was reading through here a while ago, and I thought it would be something that maybe we could ponder.
Someone just had a thought. In terms of today, they wondered if extra biblical holidays would be considered strange fire.
If you go to John chapter 4, verses 22, I think, in 23, 24, maybe 2, says, when we worship, you know not what. We know that we worship for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship in the Father, in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh each to worship him. And so Yah is a spirit, and they that worship him shall worship him in spirit and in truth. So what was happening over here, they were not doing it in the right spirit, nor were they doing it in truth. So it correlates to the fact that they will. You know. So what we do in our services could be very much like a strange fire if we're not doing it in spirit and in truth, which is a pretty big deal, believe it or not.
And more directly to the, I really think that quite possibly it's a metaphorical strange fire, yes, to do Christmas, Easter, Halloween, other pagan holidays. And say that we're doing it under Yahweh. Okay. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I would say that what was taking place at Mount Gerizim was something to take the place of what was already being done. So, again, what Nadab and Abihu were doing was taking the place of what was already given. So they were adding to. It says not to add to his word nor to take away from his word. So it would be the same thing about all the things that Yahweh has given to his people. He expects them to be done the way that he has given them, whether it be his word, whether it be his various set-apart holidays, whether it be the way in which we're supposed to honor him in those set-apart holidays, where we're supposed to walk according to his word, his ordinances. All those things are critical. And as we continue to humble ourselves before him in a way that would show that we truly desire to walk in his truth, he will then draw us nearer to himself, because I think that's the whole point of all that's going on, is that the people would then be able to be that much more close to him, to experience his true character, just as Moses desired to know him, and Yahweh revealed himself to Moses. And so in the same way, we want to do that. We need to seek out his truth and to walk in it, and not to add to it nor to take away from it.
I was just thinking of this also as, back to what Aaron did with the golden calf, maybe being somewhat, at least, a way to put it, a poor example to his sons, because I see mixed worship here as well. It seems like that's what we're talking a lot about here lately. The father definitely has an influence on his progeny, and so maybe this is an example of doing what the father did, and it's not a pretty picture.
Well, what the father did here was what a good father should do, and that's correct immediately and in proportion. It may not seem like it's in proportion, but you know what? The people had just seen the fire of Yahweh come out from the temple, or from the tent of the congregation, and devour an offering. And then these guys immediately come out, and possibly in a drunken state, offer an offering that they were not commanded to offer. That was. It could very well have been mixed worship too. By the way, they may have been emulating something they saw in Egypt. Who knows? But Yahweh immediately showed that this is not the way to go, in no uncertain terms. And that's what we are as fathers are supposed to do when we see our children doing something that's going to be harmful to them or to someone else, if it's allowed to go on. We need to correct it immediately. And you do it, you have to do it as egregiously as possible without causing any permanent damage. Okay? Otherwise, that kid's never going to learn it right. You know, if you do this, something is going to happen that's not good. And it goes beyond just getting a sting on your butt or a whatever.
I'm looking at verse 4. It says, I will be sanctified, I will be glorified. If you remember what I read in John 4, basically this is what it's, I think this is what it's dealing with here. It's a must. It's the must of John 4:24, and also you can look at John 3, 7 and 14. The I wills are must. I will be glorified. I will be sanctified. If you get in the way, then you're going to die.
Oh, no, that was, that's fine. There was a question from a while ago I didn't get a chance to ask, but someone wanted to know what, in verse 20, when it said that Moses was satisfied, if there was any, if that meant, what that meant. But if Katie was here, that would make sense. Yeah, we could ask if Katie was satisfied.
Right, it would. He listened to the explanation of Aharon and why they did not eat the meat from the goat. Basically, what Aaron was saying was, after all that that has happened today, with my sons being devoured by that fire and all of that, my attitude would not have been proper for me to eat that meat. Okay? And when Moses heard that, he was satisfied that that was a perfectly reasonable thing to do, was to then burn the thing instead of eating it. It was fully consumed. It just, they couldn't consume it in their mouths that day. So that's the way I see that anyway. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Are there any other questions or comments on chapter 10? Anything in Pal Talk? Doesn't seem to be, huh? Okay. Then let's move on to chapter 11. Hey, Susie, how would you like to read the first 28 verses of chapter 11? First 28 verses.
And Yahweh spoke to Moshe and to Aharon, saying to them, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, These are the living creatures which you do not eat among all the beasts that are on the earth. Whatever has a split hoof completely divided, chewing the cud, among the beasts that you do eat. Only these you do not eat among those that chew the cud or those that have a split hoof. The camel, because it chews the cud but does not have a split hoof, it is unclean to you. And the rabbit, because it chews the cud but does not have a split hoof, it is unclean to you. And the hare, because it chews the cud but does not have a split hoof, it is unclean to you. And the pig, though it has a split hoof, completely divided, yet does not chew the cud, it is unclean to you. Their flesh you do not eat, and their carcasses you do not touch. They are unclean to you. These you do eat of all that are in the waters. Any one that has fins and scales in the waters, in the seas or in the rivers, that you do eat. But all that have not fins and scales in the seas and in the rivers, all that move in the waters, or any living creature which is in the waters, they are an abomination to you. They are an abomination to you. Of their flesh you do not eat, and their carcasses you abominate. And all that have not fins or scales in the waters, it is an abomination to you. All these you do eat, all these you do abominate among the birds. They are not eaten, they are an abomination. The eagle, and the vulture, and the black vulture, and the hawk, and the falcon after its kind, every raven after its kind, and the ostrich, and the nighthawk, and the seagull, and the hawk after its kind, and the little owl, and the fisher owl, and the great owl, and the white owl, and the pelican, and the carrion vulture, and the stork, the heron after its kind, and the hoopoe, and the bat. All flying insects that creep on all fours is an abomination to you. Only these you do eat of every flying insect that creeps on all fours. Those which have jointed legs above their feet with which to leap on the earth, these of them you do eat, the locust after its kind, and the destroying locust after its kind, and the cricket after its kind, and the grasshopper after its kind. But all other flying insects which have 4 feet is an abomination to you. And by these you are made unclean. Anyone touching the carcass of any of them is unclean until evening. And anyone picking up part of the carcass of any of them has to wash his garments and shall be unclean until evening. Every beast that has a split hoof, not completely divided, or does not chew the cud, is unclean to you. Anyone who touches the carcass is unclean. And whatever goes on its paws among all the creatures that go on all fours, those are unclean to you. Anyone who touches their carcass is unclean until evening, and he who picks up their carcass has to wash his garments and shall be unclean until evening. They are unclean to you.
Thank you, Susie. Let's hold right there and get questions and comments up to verse 28. Anybody got anything? I mean, besides me.
If you'll notice, there were ten beasts that could be eaten. Mm-hmm. 10 is the ordinal perfection. It's a perfect number. It says you can't eat. I thought that was sort of interesting there. And there's a lot of do's and don'ts, and I think that when it talks about the coney, which is, of course, is the rabbit. It's an English name for rabbit. That she was trying to find rabbit in the Bible for her son. He doesn't eat the pork now. But he says, I don't see anything wrong with the rabbit. I don't see that in there. But it's there. And so she's going to have to show that to him, see how he considers that when he's out hunting. Liz's son. And the concern I had, not a concern, but the thought I had about the hare. What is the hare?
You know what? He was probably thinking that a coney was a hot dog that you get on the East Coast.
Yeah, but that's made out of pork.
Not Hebrew Nationals.
Well, not Hebrew Nationals, but that was before Hebrew Nationals. But in verse 6 it says the hare. Mm-hmm. Now, Susie and I were trying to discuss this, whether this was another type of a rabbit, of a different type or what, because we call the rabbit a hare. And I don't know of any other explanation. I know there's some in here that they haven't really named exactly what they are. They don't know what to call them, I guess, at least at this printing here.
Well, my Bible does indicate that it means rabbit, but even still, you have the physical, anatomical understanding of what you can and can't eat. So basically what you have to do is just take it and look at it, and you see, oh, this is not something I can eat. Yeah, but so it's pretty clear and straightforward. I just thought it was interesting that apparently the things from the sea have a greater abomination to them than do the things that, well, the birds are close to it, but not quite as bad as the animals, the four-footed creatures. Because when speaking of things that are out of the sea, he uses abominable, detestable, abhorrent, and just detestable. It's just amazing how many times he's talking about these things that people consider to be so in demand as delicacies. No, I'm talking about the things from the ocean. The things from the ocean. I'm talking about the crustaceans primarily that people seem to want to devour.
You mean shrimp?
Shrimp lobster? And lobster and
crab?
All those, yes.
Yeah. Oysters? Go ahead.
There was somebody, one person, I won't name or anything like that because he brought it up, the fact that he eats shrimp because he said it has fins and it has scales.
It has, it's a crustacean. It doesn't have scales.
Well, that was his contention. I said, you know what, brother? All I can tell you is you'll have to deal with that with the Yahweh because I won't. I'm not going to eat them. You know? And he thinks that it's all right to eat them. So,
if it's got a shell, it hasn't got fins or scales. Fins or scales means that it's got bones inside.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now, you know what? I know lots of people eat catfish, too.
I know.
They've
not supposed
no scales.
To. I know. I have no scales.
And I know people that eat eel.
And swordfish.
And it ain't got no scales.
And swordfish.
And swordfish. Sturgeon?
Sturgeon.
A sturgeon without scales? I did
it's
not
a
know
shark.
That.
It's like a shark.
I know a shark. Shark has modified scales. The skin of the shark is...
Yeah.
Is, but it's... But, yeah, it's not... All right, it's not a scale. So all you people that are eating shark cartilage for your calcium and stuff, better not do that. And yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that comes from. Yeah, no shark ever has been seen with cancer. So
yeah.
The only animal that they know of that doesn't get cancer. Oh yeah, we should eat it so we don't get cancer. Well, anyway, there's all kinds of stuff out there that we're prohibited from eating because just from this chapter, chapter 11. The fact that yeah, but all those things are an abomination. Most of them, the crustaceans in particular, are bottom dwellers, and they're there specifically to clean up the bottom of the ocean of all the fish poop. I mean, you know, just think about it. You know, you eat the crustacean, you're eating fish poop. What a great idea. You are what you eat.
We had someone to know about swordfish, if that's okay.
It has fins. Does it have scales? If it's got scales, eat it. I don't know if it has scales or not.
I think it does have scales.
The swordfish.
Yeah, swordfish.
Yeah.
I think the swordfish and the sailfish are the same family. Marlins.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a shark, though. A shark that's a...
Yeah.
A shark that's similar to that.
Yeah. Shark has skins. So, now, that means those of you that want to follow Yah, you got to stop eating your catfish. You got to stop eating the shark steak. You got to stop eating the crustaceans. They're not good for you. If you want to eat bugs, you're told what bugs you can eat. Locusts, grasshoppers... Crickets. I never saw crickets before, but crickets.
Very cricket, you know.
Yeah. Grasshoppers. Yeah. Nothing there about ants. No chocolate-covered ants.
Chocolate-covered
grasshoppers are okay.
Mark, didn't you have a story? I think it's your story about this company that made kosher pork rinds. And they were saying how these pork rinds, they found out that if it has this K on it, they sell so much better.
I remember having seen it. Yeah, they sold pork rinds, and they put a K in a circle because they knew that if it had a K in the circle, that it sold more. And people certainly were buying a whole bunch of their pork rinds until they found out that it's pig. It can't be kosher. Okay, it's not even clean, much less kosher. And yeah, you know, and one of the things that makes me nuts is I was watching a thing a Jewish cook on the Food Channel talking about kosher shrimp. Kosher shrimp. Yeah, what it turns out, it was actually pollock.
Oh.
Okay, and it was, okay. Wasn't
so like turkey
shrimp,
bacon.
But, yeah, like...
Or stuff like that.
Okay, so, other questions or comments?
Someone wants to know if anyone had a good resource that they could learn some of the basics about kosher.
You don't have to. First thing is, you don't have to worry so much about kosher. What you need to worry about is clean. Okay, kosher is a rabbinic tradition that goes beyond clean. Okay, it's not necessarily bad. In fact, there are good reasons for doing what they do. And if you want things like that, go to ArtScroll and Judaica.com, and they'll have all kinds of things that they can tell you about, books that they can offer for that. I don't know any off the top of my head. If my wife was here, she probably could tell me.
There's a good book I think Eddie has. It's Holy Cow. It's a book by Hope
Egan. Holy Cow's a good book.
That's probably good. I just typed that one.
Yeah, there's a book called Kosher by Design. And it's supposedly a very good kosher cookbook. I have not seen it myself, but my wife says that she has and she likes it. So, Kosher by Design, and I can't remember what the name of the author is. Anybody got anything else? Okay, so we got a bunch of positive command. Well, we got a few positive commands. Here are the things that you're allowed to eat, and a bunch of negative commands, things that you're not allowed to eat. Now, you know what? That happens all the time. Yeshua, or Yahweh, has given us positive commandments and negative commandments. And if you notice, there are more negative commandments than there are positive commandments. There are 365 negative commandments, and only 280-some or actually 240-some positive commandments. So the idea is that if you just Art Scroll Book News, that's where you can go and find that that information about those books. That's why we see more specifics here about what not to do. We're told what we can eat. Okay, and it's very simple. Choose the cud, has a cloven hoof. Okay, that's the mammal that you can eat. Fins and scales, that's the fish you can eat. And then he gives you four, count them, four insects that you're allowed to eat. Period. That's it. Everything else is unclean. And if you just look at it that way and worry about that, you're going to be okay as far as Yahweh is concerned. If you want to go beyond that and go to kosher, then you can look up all kinds of good stuff on the internet about it.
I think the reason why there's so many of the negative commandments is because so often human nature is to ask, well, what about, or what if? Instead of just following what we've been given as far as rules, we always seem to deviate and go, well, I want to walk on the gray line, or I want to get up on the fence and kind of walk down that first. And so you're looking both ways. You know what they say about the grass being greener on the other side of the hill. And so people are looking over there going, well, what about that over there, you know? And I think if they would just be content with what they've been given and rejoice in that, then they wouldn't have to worry about the rest. But that's, I think, part of the reason why the negative commandments is to keep us out of those areas.
I think if Eddie were here, I remember he says we always want to try and get just as close to sin as we can without jumping overboard. It's human nature.
In verse 2 it says, speak unto the children of Israel. That speak is a verb, and it's also a plural verb. So apparently, maybe the leadership, not just Moshe and Aaron, was supposed to speak, that the leadership would also take part in that and speak to. It's a possibility. I don't know, but it is a plural. Speak is plural there.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on the Torah portion for today? I want you to notice, please, there's nothing in here about aquatic mammals. So, porpoise, whale, unclean. Okay? Walrus, unclean. Seals, unclean. Don't even bother with it.
Penguins
are birds. And we're told specifically what birds we're not supposed to, and there's nothing in there about penguins that I saw. A whole lot of birds that you're not allowed to eat. If you look at this, you'll notice that all of these birds are they're either carrion eaters or they kill their prey and eat it live. Okay, every bird that is not carnivorous is not listed. Or rather, I should say, there are no birds that are non-carnivorous that are listed here.
Penguins are carnivorous.
Penguins eat fish.
Yeah.
So I would, to think about a penguin, I would say, well, what does he eat? That's how I would decide what bird I can eat. Okay? If he doesn't eat animals, then he's okay in any variety, including vultures and stuff like that that eat the carrion.
Someone said just make sure you don't eat at any Chinese restaurant.
Just don't eat at a Chinese restaurant. Well, that's mainly because most of the food there is cat. Okay? There aren't a lot of cats in Chinese restaurants.
Oh, they said it was... They said it was...
There's some dog there,
they
too.
They said it was rat.
And, oh, there's rat, too. You see, none of those are clean animals. You're not allowed to eat them. They do not have... They're not chewing the cud, and they don't have split hoof.
Speaking of rats, there were companies... Or
don't
there
talk
are,
about me
there
now.
Are companies that sell a product called Stars... It's rat spelled backwards, and that's what they're selling.
Really?
I don't know. I just know that there was quite a few years ago that there was a product out there. If it still is, I don't know. They found out that it was just rat spelled backwards.
Huh. I don't know what. Okay.
Are there any other questions or comments on the Torah portion?
Oh, someone just said, where's the FDA?
Where's the FDA?
Do you
want
to come in on that, or should I?
Why would you be worried about the FDA? They're a bunch of liars, too. So.
Anything bad for us, they're okay. Anything good.
That's right. You heard, Bill. If it's bad for you, the FDA will okay it, but if it's good for you, forget it. Okay, so our Torah portion next week will be chapter 12, and I think that's all. Through 1328. Okay, 12:1 through 1328. And we'll see you there next week. Now the Haftarah. The Haftarah for today is 2 Samuel, chapter... Where are we? Oh, 1 Kings, rather. I'm sorry. 1 Kings first, chapter 8, and verses 56 through 61. So give me a chance to get there. 1 Kings, chapter 8, chapter 10, chapter 8, 56 to 61. Blessed be Yahweh that hath given rest unto his people Israel according to all that he promised. There hath not failed one word of all his good promise, which he promised by the hand of Moshe his servant. Yahweh Eloheinu, be with us, as he was with our fathers, let him not leave us nor forsake us, that he may incline our hearts unto him, to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments, and his statutes, and his judgments, which he commanded our fathers. And let these my words, wherewith I have made supplication before Yahweh, be nigh unto Yahweh Eloheinu day and night, that he maintain the cause of his servant, and the cause of his people Israel at all times shall require. That all the people of the earth may know that Yahweh is Elohim and that there is none else. Let your heart therefore be perfect with Yahweh your Elohim, to walk in his statutes and to keep his commandments as at this day. You realize that when they sanctified the temple, that's what this is, and Solomon knelt and prayed before Yahweh, they were perfectly clean at that point. As at this day, to walk in his statutes and to keep his commandments. Okay, questions or comments on this part of the Haftarah? Anybody at all?
I think it's alluding to Exodus 33:14. He said, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. Mm-hmm. The thing that's not mentioned here in the scripture is he that had given us rest unto the people according to all that he had promised. The little word if is not there. But as we read in the scripture, if you will do this, if you do that, you know, it's conditional. I will bless thee. If my people which are called by my name and so forth, if, and a little word if, remember I told you before, is half a life if you spell it right. And he'll give you that life. He'll give you life eternal. He'll give you a good life that you live here. So these promises, that the blessing that they're asking for here, are there. And he said, has he failed his people? No. He has never failed his people. The people have failed him. They have failed him. Has the church failed him? You know, Mark, if you guys remember the picture that you always put up on the wall, he says, behold, he stands at the door and knocks.
Yeah.
They're talking about the heart's door. I think he's talking about the door of the church. He's being locked out of the door of the church. You want to know, when Mark brought all this stuff up this morning, 5-minute update, who's at fault here? The church and its people, and we are too. Because we've let it happen over the years. Some of it before our time it started. But as Mark mentioned, when is the time to stop it? When is the time to do something about it? Now. The Bible says now is the day of salvation. Okay? Now is the day to do something about it. Do not shirk who you are, what you believe. If you take ridicule from your family, believe me, we have. If you've been shunned by your family, believe me, we have. But I'm telling you something. The family of Yahweh and His blessings far exceed what I get from my family. And I have come to the conclusion at 70 years of age that, you know what? I don't give a hoot. I don't care what they say to me or about me. You know, no, we're not allowed to have any owls, so that's unclean. But you understand what I'm saying? That he may incline our hearts unto him and to walk in his way. You see, it's something we have to do here to get all the blessings and to receive them. We have to follow his Torah.
So is that why he says, according to all that he promised? Mm-hmm. So that would be inclusive of keeping his commands in order to get the blessings and to be at peace with him. Mm-hmm. Even though, again, it's not spelled out right here, but I think your point is well taken that we can claim his promises if we're keeping his Torah.
That's right. That's right. Are there any questions or comments in Pal Talk? No? All right, I have a comment from verse 58. I'm going to start in 57. And Yahweh our Elohim be with us as he was with our fathers. Let him not leave us nor forsake us, that he may incline our hearts unto him, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, which he commanded our fathers. Notice there's nothing there about sacrifices. Okay? Sacrifices were added because of the transgression. They're still necessary, don't get me wrong. But he's asking us to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments. And if we do that, then there won't be any need for us to make sacrifices. Okay? So, let's juxtapose this now with Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. There he goes into Romans. Yep. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that it may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of Elohim. In verse 1, where it says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. This is the sacrifice that we are to offer. We are to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice. We ain't killing something. Okay? We're dying to ourselves. That's our living sacrifice. Okay? Then we move on to Ephesians chapter 2. I'm going to just run it in order here. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10. Yes. 2 and verse 10, where it says, for we are his workmanship, created in Messiah Yeshua unto good works, which Elohim hath before ordained that we should walk in them.
And then from there to Philippians chapter 2 and verses 12 and 13. Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God which worketh in you both to do, to will and to do of his good pleasure. There's that work in salvation again. See there. Work out your own salvation. That does not mean that you are going to earn your salvation by doing works of Torah. What it means is, you are now saved, you should be doing works of Torah. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10, it's telling you, now that you've been saved by grace through faith, and that not of yourselves, it's a gift of God, for we are His workmanship created in Messiah Yeshua unto good works. The reason that you're saved is so that you can do the works of Torah. Now, before you were saved, it was impossible for you to do works of Torah, because you didn't have the Spirit of God to overcome your evil inclination, or your sin nature, if you'd rather. Okay? Now you have the Spirit living within you, and you can overcome your sin nature. You can overcome that evil inclination, and you can keep the law of Yahweh. The key is to be submitted to His Spirit. If you're not submitted to His Spirit, you will never do it. If you are, you're going to want to do it. Go ahead, Bill.
You know, it talks about that we are sanctified. I think the true meaning of that word in Greek is that we are being sanctified. In other words, it's the working out. It is working out this salvation with fear and trembling. Why would we, if we already have everything, like some religions say, that we have salvation, we have sanctification, we have the whole ball of wax, you see. So if that's the case, then we don't have to do nothing. You see, we don't have to do anything. We can sit on our laurels and just sit back and just take everything as they come and do whatever we want to do. Doesn't matter what we eat, doesn't matter what we do. You know, basically, if you think about it, you could make those arguments to those people that we're not under the law. It has nothing to do with that. If that's the case, then we can do whatever we want to do. You see, but that's not the case, because Paul makes mention of that. He said, if I didn't have the law, I wouldn't know that I had sinned.
See, by the way, Bill, you know, some of our laurels are bigger than others.
I noticed that.
And the more we sit on them, the more we rest on our laurels, the bigger they get.
Yes, that's true. But who are you mentioning that well?
I'm not saying.
We'll let Susie talk. We better get out of it.
So if we're going to keep His commands, just like Yahweh has called us to from the beginning, then we need to do it right, not any old way that we want to.
Yeah, I think that was the point of the Torah portion today. Don't do it the way you want to do it. Do it the way I tell you to do it. Okay? You know what? When I was in the Navy, I was a work center supervisor, you know, and I would send people out to do the work. And then I would go out and check the work to make sure it was done right, you know. And they would go out and do the work, and they'd come back and say, okay, we're all done. You can go and do the inspection now. And I would go do the inspection. I'd come back and say, you did it wrong. And they said, what do you mean you did it? I did it wrong. I said, well, this is the way you're supposed to do it. And they would say, well, that's not what you told us to do. And I told them, don't you do as I tell you to do. You do as I do. Okay? I didn't teach you like that. I taught you like this. If I said something wrong, you should have said, hey, dummy, didn't you mean like this? Okay? It's true. I'm more than willing to take correction. More than willing to subordinate myself to somebody 2 and 3 military ranks lower than me, especially if they know more than I do. Okay? I will be more than happy to do that, which happens quite a bit. Okay, other questions or comments?
One more thing. The end of the thing on 61, it says, and keep His man, walk in His statutes and keep His commandment, as at this day. You see?
Yes.
So what they were doing here was perfectly right. But the problem is, this is only one day.
Right.
It's not day two or day three or day four as they further out they go. Just like the children of Israel out of the Exodus, the further out they got, the more they forgot the blessings, the things that were coming. And they certainly remembered the cursings because they had a lot of them, because they didn't remember that day.
And in that vein, we ought to remember that day.
Yes.
Not that day in the past, but that day in the future that's coming. Okay? The thing that we're looking forward to, the thing in which we have hope. We ought to be looking forward to that day so that we remember to do as Yahweh wants us to do in this day. Okay, now, other questions or comments on 1 Kings? All right, then we're moving to 2 Samuel chapter 6. 2 Sam 6. It's only about 30 pages back here now. Let's see. 2 Sam 4, 6, 1 through 6. 7? Yeah, it could be. Okay, yeah, you're right. Yes, the first. Yeah, okay, so. Again, David gathered together all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. And David arose and went with all the people that were with him from Baalah of Judah to bring up from thence the Ark of Elohim, whose name is called by the name of the of Yahweh of hosts that dwelleth between the cherubims. And they set the Ark of Elohim upon a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, okay, we had that come out before, that was in Gibeah, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drove the new cart. And they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was at Gibeah, and accompanying the ark of God. And Ahio went before the ark. And David and all the house of Israel played before Yahweh on all manner of instruments made of fir wood, even on harps, and on psalteries, and on timbrels, and on cornets, and on cymbals. And when they came to Nachon's threshing floor, Uzzah put forth his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen shook it. And the anger of Yahweh was kindled against Uzzah, and God smote him there for his error, and there he died by the ark of Elohim. And as Watered Garden pointed out earlier today, this is, yes, it was. It was absolutely awesome. This is a direct correlation to the transgression of Nadav and Avihu. Now, Abihu and Nadav put together is Abinadab that we have right here. And so there is a correlation between the two, and that's why we get this, I'm sure, that's why we get this passage here. Not to mention the fact that this guy did something that he was not commanded to do. Actually, the whole thing was not commanded by Yahweh. There's no commandment anywhere to put the ark on a cart. Contrary to divinely prescribed law. Very good, Bill. I bet you got that out of the Chumash. Sorry, I'm just kidding. There's nothing like that in the Chumash there, because that's all just Torah. But anyway... There's a great correlation there between the two in the names of the two men who were swallowed up by fire, and the name of the father of these two guys. Uzzah's father's name was Abinadab. Just cool to see that. Okay, all the chosen men of Israel. These are the special forces. Okay, these are like. David's own temple guard and things like that. This is not the entire army. Perhaps the it's not necessarily the regular army, or rather, it's probably the regular army and not the reservists. They could call up anybody 16 to 66 to go out and fight. Well, actually, that's what we can do. No, it's anybody. I think it was anybody 20 to 60 could go out and fight. But David did not inquire of Yahweh how he was supposed to go about doing this.
There's nothing here for us to see where he inquired of Yahweh, how should I do this? Because if he had inquired of Yahweh, Yahweh would have told him, put the staves in the thing, get the priest, and carry this thing out of here. Oh, there's a lot of scripture prior to that. And remember that David, as the king, had to write his own copy of the Torah. So he knew very well that was a requirement.
I think it's important to realize that even though this was carried by the Philistines, mm-hmm. in an awkward way, contrary to what God's law was, but they were not beholden to the laws of God.
Right.
It was only his chosen people were, consequently, they sinned. So sometimes, if you see something happen, you say, well, why didn't something happen to them like it might happen to me? Because it's not required of them because they don't really know. They're ignorant of that fact, too. But we're not.
I feel like I'm being reported one. Anyway, I was just thinking about what Mark had said earlier in regards to when...
Was it right?
He asked me, is it right? I'm not the authority. I'm just a fellow seeker. I'm just thinking about what you said in regards to Nadab and Abihu when they offered the strange prayer. Was it something that maybe they had seen in Egypt done in a pagan form or worship? And I was thinking about when Bill had said, well, the Philistines did it this way. So is it kind of the same thing? I mean, when we ever transgress, if we deviate, if we add to or take away from the scriptures, basically we're falling into pagan territory.
Yeah.
Anytime, yeah.
Great midrash. Very good.
That's it.
That was a great midrash. It really was.
And on the other hand, when you had mentioned whenever we were studying about the pharaohs and their birthdays,
yeah.
you said only the pagan kings, and when they did, somebody died.
Yeah, there was always something bad happened because
when,
of the pagan.
So when I was really convicted about that, and I said, you know what, we shouldn't even be doing birthdays. We should not even be doing birthdays, if that's the case. So we quit doing them. Let me tell you, if you don't think that caused an uproar, since we don't do Christmas, and since we don't do Easter and so forth like that, now it isn't that we don't offer them gifts throughout the year, not for those things, but they just can't see that. Well, oh well, you know, like well, we're really cheapskates. Well, my wife being Jewish could pinch a few pennies, but.
And she's really good at it, too, I'll tell you what.
But she's also
a nickel till the buffalo. No, it won't go.
She's also a Proverbs 31 woman. She takes care of that. But that she is a Proverbs 31 woman. She checks and searches before she buys. Now, so the context here is if you know to do right and you don't do it. That it's a sin, and we are accountable for it. That is the reason we don't, because, and the more we searched it out and saw, you know, they kill people because, during the birthdays because of that. And they'll say, well, what about Yeshua's birthday? They never celebrated his birth. They celebrated the death at the Passover. They didn't celebrate his birth. Any time that I ever saw in the Bible, to the fact that the shepherd showed up and heralded that birth was only that they would know that salvation has come to them. You know? They don't understand exactly where when he was born or anything, so what they do is the wrong day anyhow. But that's how I fell into conviction about the birthdays, because of I didn't know. Now I know.
Well, cool. Are there any other questions or comments on the Haftarah portion? Or... Life goes on. Was it a? Liz is telling me there was a vehicle sitting outside with its lights on, just sitting. Was it a Hummer? Was it painted in camouflage? I'm not worried real about that. Okay. Are there any questions or other questions or comments on the Haftarah portion? If not, let's move on to the Psalm. Psalm 61.
70.
I'm sorry. 76. Yeah, 61. I'm looking right at 76:1, and that's why I said 61. Psalm 76. Okay. Now, we had
We had Susie read this for us today, and she did really good because she saw the Selah in there twice, and she stopped. The Selah means stop and think about that, consider that, okay? So when we get there, I want you to consider the verse right before. Okay, in Judah is Elohim known. His name is great in Israel. In Salem also is his tabernacle and his dwelling place in Zion. There break he the arrows of the bow, the shield and the sword, and the battle. Selah. Stop and think about that for a minute. There in Salem is his tabernacle, his dwelling place is in Zion. And there he breaks arrows of the bow, and the shield, and the sword, and the battle. Ooh, I think maybe we're talking about the redemption happening right there. Go ahead.
It says, in Judah is Yah known. Have you considered that? Huh? Do you know that it's the only name in the word which contains all the letters of Yod Heh Vav Heh? So, and there's one added letter. It's called the Dalet. The Dalet is what? The door. So, through Judah, Yah came to earth and he provided a door for us to have access to him.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Very good. It also says, his name is great in Israel.
That's not my words. Those came out of the book in his own words.
In his own words. Yeah. Bill has been reading in his own words since he came home from Sukkot. And he's been studying the thing because I'm sure he hasn't been through it yet. he's devouring it and putting the thing in his brain because it's a very good book, he says. Now, in Judah is God known. His name is great in Israel. And so we're talking about both houses. He says, in Salem also is his tabernacle and his dwelling place in Zion. There break he the arrows of the bow, the shield, the sword, and the battle. That's what he's going to do when he comes. When Messiah comes, that's what he's going to do. That's why we stopped and thought about it, because we got all of that stuff just then. Go ahead.
I think part of the reason we're thinking about it as well is because it's stated as though it's already a done work. It's a done deal. I mean,
right.
We know it's going to happen, and it's written here, which is a couple thousand years old, and it's a done deal written then, so it's understood that it's going to take place. We know that in the Valley of Jehoshaphat, which is that valley that runs right there, it says that Jerusalem will be surrounded by the nations, the peoples of the earth are going to surround it. Not only at the time of the Gog Magog, which will come at the end of the millennium, but also there is going to be a surrounding of Jerusalem just as at the close of the last days. And yet, what is most important is that Yahweh Elohim is known in Yehuda. His name is great in Israel. And his tabernacle is in Salem, is in peace, or in Jerusalem. And his dwelling place is in Zion.
Mm-hmm.
These are like the center, these are like the masterpieces. Like if you walk through a museum and you see all the different works and you come to one particular gallery that's set up in such a most majestic way, and then it has within the center of that gallery a vignette that's set up in such a way as to bring all the attention, focus on this one work of art.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have here. I think it's just so important, so near the heart of Elohim that this is what he wants to show, that he wants a place in the earth where he will be the centerpiece
mm-hmm.
of all of mankind, all that he's created, he'll be the centerpiece of his creation,
mm-hmm.
though that he stands apart from his creation. And it's like coming into Revelation, where you enter in with John into the holy place, into the heavenlies, and there on the throne is seated the glory of God, and the Lamb is seen there, a Lamb that is slain. It's the same kind of a thing. The centerpiece, the most majestic, important parts of the kingdom are here. Look here, look deep. His way is in the tabernacle. It's in Zion.
One thing about Zion, it's interesting, the fact that until this particular time, Zion had no place in history until this event. This is it. Right here. Starts out with a bang, doesn't it?
The verse 3, where he breaks the bows, the arrows in the, of the bow. Look at Psalm 46 and verse 9, where it says, he maketh wars to cease unto the end of the world. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. That's in 46:9, Psalm 46:9. This is really the only real hope for Eretz Yisrael to ever see peace. And it will happen in the millennium. And it says that he's going to make war to cease unto the end of the earth. Right at the end of the earth, there will be another war. Or at least, people gathered for a war. Okay? That's in Revelation chapter 20 and verse 7. So, that's that.
Verse 10 stands out. For the wrath of man shall praise thee. He uses this evil. He uses this turmoil of the nations, of this warring together, to bring him praise. Just as it happened in the days of Jehoshaphat, when they were surrounded by this huge, innumerable army of the... they were the hosts of Ammon, Moab and Ammon, and Mount Seir. And they were coming against Jerusalem under the kingship of Jehoshaphat. And word came from Yahweh saying, do not fear. This, just stand fast and you will see the salvation. Very similar to what happened at the waters of the Red Sea. They were told that this was not their battle to fight. This was strictly Yahweh's battle. He would do the battle. And what had happened is then the shift took place where they were no longer in fear. In fact, they became very confident. They rose up early in the morning. And in fact, Jehoshaphat set apart those that were the psalm singers, those that were the musicians, those are the ones that were of the household of Levi, that were specially endowed with gifts of praise and worship. And they began to worship as they went out in the direction of this great army. And even before they actually arrived there, Yahweh had begun to discomfit the army, and they actually attacked one another. They destroyed each other. And so the wrath that they had in their hearts was pent up and was then exhausted on themselves, was used then to bring glory and praise and honor, because then it became the time of testing. It became the Valley of Baraka, the Valley of Blessing. Mm-hmm. And so they were there and they received not only the answer and the intervention of Yahweh, but they also received a blessing because they couldn't even carry the first time they went down there to where all these armies had been destroyed. They couldn't even carry away all the booty. They had to make several trips to be able to carry away all the things that they were blessed with to honor Yahweh, because he showed himself that he was going to be the one that would receive the glory and the honor. And they worshipped him, and he intervened. In the same way, this is what this verse talks about. This whole psalm talks about that. The victorious power of Yahweh Elohim, the Elohim of Jacob.
All right. Are there other questions or comments so far? We've gone through verse 3. Starting at verse 4. Thou art more glorious and excellent than the mountains of prey. The stout-hearted are spoiled. They have slept their sleep, and none of the men of might have found their hands. At thy rebuke, O Elohim of Jacob, both the chariot and horse are cast into a dead sleep.
Thou, even thou, art to be feared. And who may stand in thy sight when once thou art angry? Thou didst cause judgment to be heard from heaven. The earth feared and was still. When Elohim arose to judgment to save all the meek of the earth. Selah. Stop and think about that. Thou didst cause judgment to be heard from heaven. The earth feared and was still when Elohim arose to judgment to save all the meek of the earth. Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Boy, oh boy.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Let me look at verse 10 for just a second. Surely the wrath of man shall praise thee. The remainder of wrath shalt thou restrain. I'm thinking great tribulation. I'm seeing the wrath of man against Yahweh's anointed and against his people. Okay? And when Yahweh pours out his wrath on them, that's what restrains against his people. Wow. So, other questions or comments? Up to verse 10. Oh, Bill does have something.
Just a word, I looked up that deep sleep in the Hebrew is talking about they were stunned. Stunned. Just sort of put them out like, you know, in some sort of a sleep or something, you know. So,
could be.
Now, you understand, it says, when Yah arose in judgment, this is speaking of Yeshua, because when he arises from on the right hand of the Father, that's when the foo is going to hit the fan.
Who?
The foo.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, who are you calling a foo? Okay, verses 11 to the and 12. Vow and pay unto Yahweh your God. Let all that be round about him bring presents unto him that ought to be feared. He hath cut off the spirit of princes. He is terrible to the kings of the earth. Wow. There's Yahweh's restraint of the wrath of the heathen against his people. It says, he shall cut off the spirit of the princes. He is terrible. He is one to be terrified of to the kings of the earth. And you know what? That's the reason that they hate us and fear us so much, because they know that the Elohim that we serve is the one that they will bow to, and they hate the idea. Go ahead, Bill.
Is it possible when it talks about him bring presents on the crowns that the saints will lay at his feet? In the end time, that could represent that too, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's sort of what I saw there in other things, but to me that's pretty significant. You know?
Well, yeah, and you know it's really interesting because it says, surely the wrath of man in verse 10 shall praise thee, the remainder of wrath shalt thou restrain. Mm-hmm. Then it says, vow and pay unto Yahweh your Elohim, let all that be round about him bring presents unto him that ought to be feared. Mm-hmm. That's talking about us.
That's right, fearing him.
Right there in the middle of where he's restraining the kings and the princes.
You had the two wrath.
The wrath of man and the wrath of Elohim in the same
coming. So you have that. But in between is where the gifts are going to be offered.
Yes.
That should, you know, put an arrow up in there in between those two. That's
okay, other questions or comments on Psalm 76? Anybody in Paltalk got anything to contribute there, Phil? Everybody's kind of quiet right now. Ronald!
It's interesting in regards to the Ark of the Covenant that in 1 Samuel chapter 6 it talks about it when it was taken the first time, and then in 2 Samuel chapter 6 it's talking about when it's taken the second time, and both of those incidences having the Ark being placed in a cart. Mm-hmm. In the first incident, the situation is the lords of the Philistines, and it's like what is written here in Psalm 76, where it talks about the princes and the kings being feared. Now, they were in deep dread. In fact, they were speaking very clearly of what had happened to the Egyptians. They reminded their counselors to the kings and to the princes of the Philistines reminded them that what had happened to Pharaoh after he hardened his heart, after being warned, that he continued to be punished by the Elohim of Israel. And so they decided they were going to send gifts. And so just as it was talking about here in Psalm 76 that they would send gifts, well, they had these golden hemorrhoids and mice that they put into the cart that they might give a gift unto the Elohim of Israel. And they would also find out whether or not for sure it was the king, which who was Yahweh himself, was going to be the one responsible for what had happened to them. And he is the one who was responsible, because exactly the way that they had laid out the conditions, it was fulfilled in that the two milk cows left their calves and went and took the ark directly, straight up to Israel. And there they stopped when they reached that area. And so what they had sought in regards to a testing miracle or sign was given to them. And so I'm just, again, seeing the connections as we read through here that I've had a difficult time getting through this one, guys. I've had two Reading commentaries the entire time I've been speaking, on my right and on my left. So anyway, I'm going to draw this one to a close. Thank you.
What's new?
Okay, what's new? That's right. That's exactly right. What's new? You're trying to make people think that this is something different? Okay, any other questions or comments on Psalm 76? Going once?
He is terrible to the kings of the earth.
Going twice? He is terrible to the kings of the earth. He is terrifying to them. That's what that means. Doesn't mean that he treats them terribly, although, you know, I'm sure that they think it's pretty terrible the way that he treats them. But he is terrifying. And he very well should be. They very well should be terrified of him. Are there other... And by the way, so should we.
Yes. Amen.
Are there any other questions or comments on Psalm 76? Going once. Going Mark chapter 7. Let's see, we got to go back about 7 pages this way. Oh, look, there's Mark chapter 7. And verses 1 through 23. We'll go ahead and read them all, and then we'll do a commentary on it. Then came together unto him. When? Okay. It's not right there in the last verse. So, then came together unto him the Pharisees and certain of the scribes which came from Jerusalem. And when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled, that is to say, with unwashen hands, they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Jews, except they wash their hands oft, eat not, holding the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the market, except they wash, they eat not. And many other things there be which they have received to hold, as the washing of cups and pots, brazen vessels, and of tables. Then the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, Why walk not thy disciples according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands? Hey, at least they knew it was a tradition of the elders. I mean, that's a good thing. Okay, he answered and said unto them, Well hath Esaias prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, This people honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, ye hold the tradition of men, and the washing of pots and cups, and many other such like things ye do. And he said unto them, Full well ye reject the commandment of God, that ye may keep your own traditions. For Moshe said, Honor your father and your mother, and whoso curseth his father or his mother, let him die the death. But you say, If a man shall say to his father or mother, It is Corban, that is to say, it's a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited of me, he shall be free. And you suffer him no more to do aught for his father or his mother, making the word of God of none effect through your tradition, which ye have delivered, and many such like things you do. And when he had called all the people unto him, he said unto them, Hearken unto me, every one of you, and understand.
There is nothing from without a man that entering into him can defile him. But the things which come out of him, those things, those are they that defile the man. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear. And when he has entered into the house from the people, his disciples asked him concerning the parable. And he said unto them, Are ye so without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatsoever thing from man, it cannot defile him, because it entereth not into his heart, but into the belly, and goeth out into the draught, purging all meats? And he said, That which cometh out of the man, that defileth the man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these things come from within and defile the man. Okay, we got any questions or comments on these verses? I'm sure we do. Go ahead, Ron.
This portion is talking about the issue of washing of hands, but it's been grabbed by those that want to do away with the law, that want to be able to eat whatever they want to eat. And they'll say, oh, look at this. You know, we just got to reading in Leviticus, the final portion that we had for the day, chapter 11, talked about the dietary laws, what is clean, what is unclean. And there are those that would like to think, oh, Yeshua came and he fulfilled all the law, therefore all the law is done away with. We only have to keep the two great commandments and the Ten Commandments, which really doesn't include the fourth commandment. I'm riding a little heavy on it, folks, but I've had to deal with this. And one of the major issues that we have in this is that there's been a corruption of his very word. I have before me a Bible that I have used for many years now, and got it when I was a young man in Bible school. I thought it was a great text to work from, and it was a study Bible. But too many of the modern translations, the New American Standard is the one I'm talking about right now, the NIV, the New King James, all these have a leaning and a great support upon the New Greek text, which is a Westcott-Hort remaking of the original Greek text, which is the Textus Receptus. Folks, it's been corrupted. This is what it says here in verse 19 in regards to the food. And this is how it's taken. let me start first actually with verse 18. And he said to them, Are you too so uncomprehending? Do you not see that whatever goes into the man from outside cannot defile him, because it does not go into his heart, but into his stomach, and is eliminated? Thus he declared all foods clean. Now, where do they get that?
Actually, it's not in the King James.
I know it's not in the King James. I know it's not in the King James, folks, because it's Textus Receptus. This is a new revised text. It's a... Folks, and most of the current denominations use either the NIV or mostly use the NIV. Some of them use the New American Standard, some of them use the New King James, but folks, some of them actually use the Living Bible or the Good News for Modern Man, or some of the stuff. Folks, those are so corrupted. You really have to be careful. You really need to understand that these translations, sometimes it's just small, little, incremental changes. Sometimes they're very big, very large changes. But they can have a tremendous change over a period of time. I still have this Bible, but I like to use it. And when I read it always looking for what is wrong with it. Because it kind of helps me to tune in to what the adversary is actually trying to do in incremental ways to distort my faith. I still use the King James, and I use the Scriptures. And I also use J.P. Green's Interlinear Bible, which is also very good. So, folks, you really got to study this stuff out. You just can't read it and accept it.
Now, the fact is, now, even if I agree with everything that you just said, okay, let me make that caveat. But even if the Westcott-Hort text is correct in putting that phrase in, okay, thus he declared all foods clean. Food is from the Hebrew word, lechem. Okay? He made all foods clean. Okay? What is food? To a Jew, food is not pig, it is not shrimp, it is not shellfish, it is not carrion fowl. Okay? Food is biblical food.
The New American Standard and the New Translations are not written for the Jews. They're written for the Gentiles.
I understand that.
And the Gentiles wouldn't.
I understand that.
They think that anything that.
I understand.
Anything
that.
That's out there that you put in your mouth and chew and swallow is food.
Where I'm coming from is even that argument can be defeated by using the Hebrew from which all of this came.
Right.
Now, if you notice, throughout the Brit Hadashah, the problem that anybody that stood up for Torah, was always on the outs with the Pharisees and the scribes. Always. In other words, the religious leaders or the religious people, the ones that's going to give you the most problems when you're out there trying to deal with these situations. It says here they're bred with defiled. Well, it's talking about, it's a ceremony that they do, a cleansing, that's a ceremonial cleansing that they do. Now, it says holding the traditions of the elders. And again, it says holding the traditions of the elders. Why don't they do that? Because it's dung. It is totally dung. It's traditions of the men. And what do I say about it? Flush it. Get rid of it. You know, don't. And one of the serious things I see here in verse 8, it says, for laying aside the commandments of Yahweh by holding the traditions of men. Can I tell you something? Here Torah is playing second fiddle. Playing second fiddle. That's not a good thing. Remember Nero? He fiddled while Rome burnt. Huh? Can I tell you something? You let Torah.
Blamed it on the Christians.
You let Torah play second fiddle. Anybody that lets Torah become second fiddle is going to burn. I'm telling you, it's going to burn. That's quite a saying that he did here. He didn't fluff any words at all here.
Right.
He said it straight out to them.
The traditional, conventional Christian wisdom on this particular passage. Does not entertain context whatsoever. It does what we talked about earlier today. They take a numbered soundbite and they pull it out of its context and they twist it and try to force it back in the way it doesn't fit. Okay? So they take that verse that was added, okay, thus he declared all foods clean. They take that verse and they twist that thing around and they do not look at the context, the whole context of Yeshua's speaking. Every word Yeshua speaks in here is talking about the context of tradition versus Torah. The context is tradition versus Torah. Yeshua is not discussing, is not declaring all animals clean here. Verse 19, meats. Just what is meat biblically? It's any kind of food, but particularly when it talks about meats in the King James Bible, it's talking about grain and probably vegetables. It's not talking about flesh food. Okay, so let's consider this thing as in its entire context. Okay, let's not just rip it out of this context and try to make it fit some way that it doesn't work. Let's take the context of the entire scripture. Let's look at what Yeshua was talking about in this whole passage, which was the conflict between tradition and law. He gives an example of how they put tradition above law with the whole idea of Corban. Okay? There is a biblical thing about Corban. It's something that's dedicated to Yahweh. But you know what? If something is dedicated to Yahweh, he better not be using it for his own use either. Okay? Yeshua is making the point that you're not following Torah, you're following somebody's idea of what ought to be. In other words, you're doing exactly the same thing as Nadab and Abihu. You're adding to the scripture. Mm-hmm. You have something, Susie? Oh, I thought you had a mic in your hand, Susie.
Well, go ahead.
Just having
same
read...
I'm the same way, Micah.
Having read the passages from our scheduled readings today, I just, the word name kept coming back to me. And especially, it started with this Mark 7, where he is saying, you know, what is inside the man comes out, and what we succumb to from the inside of ourselves to obey gives us a bad name if we let it be seen. We, in a sense, become what we do. And even back in Tehillim 76, I just noticed that as we were reading it the second time today, in Yehuda Elohim is known, his name is great in Yisrael. Well, I guess just a reminder again, his name, it's set apart. And it says it's great in Israel. And nowhere else, really, is he saying his name is great. We are his people, we are Israel, so his name has to be great in us, but it has to be great in us. It can't be defamed. So we are called to uphold his name. And then thinking back to 2 Samuel 6, where his name is between the cherubim, the Ark of Elohim that is called by the name of Yahweh of hosts. Again, it's a set-apart name. And anything, again, that we do that is not in accordance to his word makes him look bad, and he has put his name on his people. So, and I know he told that to David when David sinned. You, more or less, I know I'm really, really paraphrasing, you have made me a mockery to the people around you, or to the people of the earth. So, again, why should we uphold what he says? Because his word is his name, he's his word. It's all-encompassing. So, if we want to be his people, we need to do it his way.
Okay, you said you've made me a mockery, my name a mockery. Okay, is that not exactly? Remember the last thing that I read in the 5-minute update today. Well, second last thing was the Chuck Baldwin article. Is that not exactly what Christianity and anybody who claims to be a biblical Christian and voted for John McCain did? They made a mockery of Yahweh's name. They made a mockery of it. Oh, wait, before you do that, wait, you've got to put the disclaimer in.
It's the culmination. This is the disclaimer. These views and opinions that are now being given are those of mine alone and not of those of Bet Yaakov, but they probably should be, as Mark points out. But in regards to what Mark was saying, it's true that it is a culmination, or it is a mockery, but it is a culmination of years of being programmed to go in that direction. The example that was given in regards to South Carolina. I mean, to just turn their backs on the very truths that they know and hold dear simply for party allegiance is foolish. And then, you know, the religious leaders that have begun siding with a particular party and then continue to hold that line because they don't want to appear as though they're, I guess, not being consistent. It seems strange, but they'd be more consistent to follow the consistency of the Word, that's which right. is what they're supposed to be doing to begin with. They're going to be spiritual leaders.
That's right. That's right. Preach it. Wait a minute. There's Bill.
When he mentions here about they've made the word
going back
of,
to the scripture?
Made of Yah.
Oh, okay.
Made of Yah. Of none of defiled the word has made it none effect. Mm-hmm. What he's really talking about, people, was not the Brit Hadashah.
Right.
He's talking about the Tanakh. He's talking about the Torah. In other words, he's saying you're speaking against what Moses taught.
That's right.
Basically, you're speaking against what Moses taught. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter what we take inside this way. You know, what we eat.
but it's on the inside, because you mentioned all these things over here. It says in verse 23, and all these evil things come, but the word there is issue.
Right.
The real, true word is issue, from within. Yeah. And that's a very strong biblical commentary there. It's the issues of the heart that tells who a man is and what he is. Although the biblical laws are important.
Yep. Now, I want to point out something that is, it's in the structure of the sentences here. In verse 3, it says, for the Pharisees and all the Jews, except they wash their hands oft, eat not, holding the traditions of the elders. And if you look at that in juxtaposition to verse 14, and when he had called all the people unto him, he said unto them, hearken unto me, every one of you, and understand. Okay, the Pharisees and all the Jews is talking about the religious leaders. All the people is talking about just the common folk. The common folk. It's very important to make this distinction, okay, because the Pharisees and all the Jews is talking about the political religious leadership. It's not talking about the people. When and this holds throughout Scripture. This holds throughout the New Testament. When it's talking about the Jews, it's talking about the religious leadership. When it talks about the people, it's talking about your average Hebrew in the street. So it wasn't the people that had Yeshua crucified. It was the leaders of the Hebrew religion. They knew exactly who he was, and they didn't want to lose their position. This is like the corporate sin of religious leadership, political religious leadership. They do not want to lose their position of power and authority. And by the way, what makes them rich? Okay? So while you're reading through the scriptures, always keep that in mind. When it's talking about the Jews, it is at least 99% of the time talking about the religious authorities and not the people. The people of Israel loved Yeshua. Okay, they loved him and they followed him. It was the people, it was the Jews and the Pharisees in particular that hated him and wanted to get rid of him.
By the way, Mark, there's a big movement. You started a big movement for Patron Palin in 2012, by the way.
Patron Palin in 2012. I wouldn't have her as my running mate, sorry. Not because she doesn't have good ideas, but because I'm sorry, but scripturally, female in power is a spirit of Jezebel.
Who's your running mate, then?
Deborah was not a judge. Deborah was a prophetess. Barak was the judge. Yeah. That's right. Vashti didn't honor her husband, and so Esther came along and did. Anyway, that's way beside the point. That Patron Palin thing. Sorry, not going to work. Patron Paul. There you go. Or Paul Patron. That would be better. I have a cousin named Paul Patron, come to think of it.
I thought you were going to run with Eddie.
I'm going to run with Eddie? That would really be cool. That would really be cool. I'd like to do that. But anyway, other questions or comments on the Brit Hadashah portion for today? Up to verse 23.
Dumrod just wants diplomatic immunity, though.
You know what? Rav Shaul tells us that we are ambassadors of the kingdom of Yahweh. Therefore, we have diplomatic immunity. We are ambassadors of another country.
of another kingdom. So that's that. I think we should have diplomatic immunity. Of course, the government of the United States, the governments of the world will never recognize it, but we ought to. They will in the end. Yes, they will. Okay, other questions or comments?
We have a question from Chikat. So, Chikot, we're going to release the mic and we'll...
Chakotay.
We'll have you come to
the
mic.
Executive officer of the Enterprise.
Right now. Chikot, you have your hand up. You can come to the mic, Chikot. Okay, well, we tried.
Looks like he's not
going
up for it, huh?
Well, type in your question then, if that's the case.
And do so relatively quickly, because you're going to be probably the last comment here. Unless a whole bunch of people in Pal Talk jump in real quickly.
Okay, he just wants to know, are women allowed to preach? Isn't that another question?
It's the same question. Actually, it's the same question. In my opinion, and remember, the opinions expressed here... This is my opinion and not that of Beit Yaakov Hebraic Congregation or Hebraic Heritage Ministries International, although it should be. In my opinion, a woman in leadership is exercising the spirit of Jezebel. Sorry if that offends anybody, but that's my opinion. Okay? I don't think women should preach. Oh, my wife just went, ah! Yeah, well... Notice you're not on the mic a whole lot, Deb. You noticed that, haven't you? Okay. Was that a straight enough answer for you?
They agreed. They said, I don't think so either. But Dumrod says Judge Judy is pretty good at being mean.
She's very good at being mean. And you want to talk about the spirit of Jezebel. Oh, my goodness, that woman is just full of it. And you know what? That's the anybody in political power is exercising the spirit of Jezebel, really and truly. I don't watch those shows. I can't stand them. Okay, other questions or comments on the Brit Hadash Shop portion? Going once? Going twice? Okay, our Midrash is over. Thank you all for coming along and traveling with us. Make sure that your seats and tray tables are in the full upright and locked position. thanks so much for coming and joining in with us. Remember for next week that our Torah portion is going to be on Leviticus chapters 12 and 13. Shalom in Yeshua the Messiah. Hope to see you again next week.